Good evening. Thanks for being here. Glad to be here, as always. So, if you were here last month, and or if you've been part of kind of conversations happening recently within the Samba, the community, but mainly looking at last month's talk, I had spoken about, for myself, coming to the realization that I need to hit the restart or refresh button on my practice. So setting a few things down, not as much as initially thought, but also give me a chance to just reground in my practice. And part of that happening, a couple weeks ago, I found myself, for the first time since it happened, listening to the recording of the ceremony when I was named a teacher, a sensei. It's like, oh yeah, you know, connecting with those things. And things in there made me think of things before that time. And so just kind of revisiting my path overall, which of course I've been in touch with and known about, but you know, to spend more time looking into it is refreshing for me and renewing. And thinking about that, a lot of you here didn't come to know me till tonight or till just the past few years as being here as a teacher. Others of you, we've practiced for years, but the whole story of how I even came to practice, bits and pieces fall out in my talks and in our conversations from time to time, but I'm not really sure how many of you know who your teacher is as far as that goes. How I came to practice in the first place. So part of this is me revisiting and telling my story, but it's also letting you get to know a little bit more about how I ended up, you know, again, coming to this practice. So that's what I'm going to do tonight is just, we have a thing called the wayfaring mind or the way-seeking mind talk that people give when they share their story of how they came to practice. So it's a good thing to do for all of us from time to time. And I did give one years ago with Springs Mountain Sangha, but that was with Springs Mountain Sangha, and it was years ago, so here's tonight's version, which, yeah, we'll see what it is. We'll hear what it is. It's also that I'll go and speak at a high school or at a college, and somebody usually will ask, how did you start practicing? Why did you choose to practice this? And so they get a short version of it. And you get the longer version of it. But what I say in general to them is, in a way, I was unintentionally raised this way. just by happenstance. Grew up in Colorado, wasn't raised with any religion formally, other than being in a Judeo-Christian society and having those influences there. But my parents were raised Southern Baptist and put that down when they moved out here to Colorado. So we'd go and visit relatives down in Arkansas in the South and go to church there with them and occasionally go to church around the Springs area where we grew up. But it was never an ongoing thing. So not really raised with any religion. But, you know, getting up to the mountains, getting out in nature, which there's a big thread of that connection in our practice, in Chan or Zen or Taoism, which is all mingled, you know, together there, Buddhism and Taoism. And I, today, was reminded by listening to a song, it's like, well, kind of raised on John Denver spirituality. if you're big into John Denver, you might know what I mean, but one of the songs that comes to mind is Sweet Surrender, where he says, like the refrain or the chorus, sweet surrender, live without care, like a fish in the water, like a bird in the air. That sounds very Zen to me, very Taoist, yes. You know, just root in this. So in that way, I was inadvertently, not intentionally raised, I say, this way. But I think I was also, there's maybe just a natural inclination towards this practice somehow. And so when it comes down to it, I didn't really choose to practice this. It's kind of It's just who I am, and that's what I've discovered over the years of my life. So, you know, looking back on my life, some of these are after I came to practice and looked back on things and was like, oh, that's interesting. In retrospect, I wonder what that was. No story about it. At the time it happened, no idea that I was connecting to anything at all. Maybe I wasn't. Maybe it's just a strange coincidence. But, you know, we can have that happen. We look back on our lives and realize maybe we were connecting with something. We didn't realize we were connecting with it because we didn't know what it was at the time. Yeah. So my first memory of connecting with anything, I was 5 or 6 years old. And my grandparents were visiting. My birthday's in the summer, and they were visiting in the summer, so I'm not sure if I had already turned 6 or was still 5, but 5 or 6 years old. And after doing something else, we were back at home, and my grandfather wanted to watch his favorite TV show. And it turned out to be that old Kung Fu TV show with David Carradine. And I just remember when he turned it on, it really caught my attention. And, you know, I've seen lots of TV shows, and as a kid, encountered lots of TV shows, but this one sticks in my memory. I kind of just sat up and was like, whoa, what's this? And I can still picture the room and picture the TV, and my grandfather, it just, really caught my attention. So years later, I find out, having come to the practice, that there's Taoist and Buddhist philosophy woven all throughout the show. And, you know, it was rooted in the Shaolin Temple, Shaolin Kung Fu. Well, if you don't know, Bodhidharma, who's the first ancestor of Zen, sat in meditation at the Shaolin Temple. So the legend is he started Chan, or Zen, and Kung Fu. Both of those things claim him. So there's this connection of our lineage of Chan with Kung Fu. And there it was in this TV show that, again, it just captured my attention. I didn't know what I was seeing, but it was very much, whoa, what's this? So then, fast forward several years to my mid-teens. I'd stayed interested in that kind of stuff, Kung Fu and whatnot. I took Taekwondo for a while, but by this time was no longer taking it. But I was still interested in Kung Fu itself, Bruce Lee, and would rent videos of the Shaolin monks, you know, those funky Kung Fu movies that we see, which, that I saw. I don't know if you've seen them. But there's Buddhism, Zen, and Taoism woven throughout them as well. So that had stayed with me to some degree up through my teens. But then it was more than that. Like my room, as far as I know, might not be the typical teenager's room that you'd expect. So I didn't have posters of girls or rock bands or anything on my walls. What I had was calligraphies. I'd gone to Pier 1 when it was more of an Asian import store, and they had those really cheap calligraphies you could buy. So I had calligraphies on my wall. And they also had the little figurines, which I just liked them. I didn't know what they were, but looking back, they were kind of Taoist figurines and Buddhist figurines. So I had a shadow box, and I would save my money and buy these figurines and put them in the shadow box next to the calligraphy. So I had those on my wall. And I had a tea table in my room and I had tea sets. So I would have tea in my room. And for Christmas, I asked for a wok. And all of that kind of stuff happening. So there in my teenage years, kind of setting up a little temple of sorts in my room for no reason other than I felt inclined to do so. And a few years later, when we had a garage sale, I was the one who made the big money because that stuff was in fashion. So I don't have any of it, except I still have a teapot from back then. And only one of the teacups survived. So I still have one of the teapots I got for Christmas from back then. So that's kind of where I was in my mid-teen years. It was also, there was one time where there was an article in one of the Kung Fu magazines about people going to study at the Shaolin Temple. Westerners and whatnot. So I was 13 or 14, and I wrote a letter to the author and said, I would really like to come and practice at the Shaolin Temple. I know I'm just a kid, but I'd really like to come. And I know there's a religious practice, and I'm fine with that. I actually think it'd be good. And, you know, just really write back to me. How can I do this? And I never heard back. But I did reach out and try to say, how can I get involved in this from that age? Yeah. So then, oh yeah, I wrote out notes because there's stories that could be rabbit trails and rabbit holes that I could wander along and fall into if I'm not careful, and I don't want to do that too much. So I'll keep myself on track with that, and how about I get my little watch out too? Maybe. There it is. Watch out! Watch out. So, the garage sale happened. I was getting ready to go to college or something. So, which takes us a few years later, or a couple of years later. And that's when I had my first experience with religion sincerely, to take it up directly, and it was with Christianity. I had a girlfriend who, her father had been a minister. They were deeply religious and attended the New Life Church, which is one of those evangelical mega churches now. I was at the groundbreaking of the building that you see now. That's how long ago it was. But it was in the earlier days, but it was still a pretty big church. And so it was that style of Christianity. I dove deep into it with support and encouragement from her and her family. Took it up sincerely and enjoyed it. But for about 2 years, I think I was involved in that. And every Sunday, we lived up in Greeley when we went to college, but we'd come down to the Springs when we could and go to church with them. And so every time at the end of the service, there would be that call for anybody who felt moved to surrender their life to Jesus, come forward. And a lot of times I was like, not yet, not yet. But then one Sunday I did. I walked up and surrendered my life to Jesus and went through that, and it felt really good and enlivening. One of them, my girlfriend or her family, they gave me a Bible with my name written on it and really supported that. And so it was great. But then shortly after that, I'm not sure exactly, it seems like pretty soon, things started to sour. One of the things specifically was that shortly after doing this, you know, coming to this point of, I'm ready to do this, a very vulnerable place, you know, to be and to step forward and do that, my girlfriend shared with me a list of people that she had of, you know, there were people that she wanted to save, and I was one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh. It felt like, was I just a project? Just somebody you were working on? I thought you were genuinely, and it's a mixture of both, genuinely sharing with me your tradition and your religion, but also it felt like I was just this project you were trying to work on. And so I was kind of, huh? But I kept going with it anyway, but that was definitely a bump there in the road of that traveling. The other thing that happened is I continued to have questions about things. What about this? What about that? And the general response I would get was, just have faith, just believe. And initially it was in the vein of, this is normal. People recognizing you go through this as part of this path. But just have faith and just believe and you'll get over it. But I continued to have questions. And their encouragement to have faith and just believe kind of became through gritted teeth. That's my embellishment of it. But just have faith, just believe. It's like your questions are becoming annoying. And the message that I was receiving, maybe not intentionally, was your faith isn't strong enough. Your belief isn't strong enough. That's the problem. You shouldn't have questions anymore, right? My experience of it. Really not sure what they were intending there, but a combination of that and, you know, I just started to fall away and my questions remained, yeah? So it was up around this time that a friend in college lent me the Tao Te Ching. The Tao Te Ching. So that one of the two Taoist texts, central Taoist texts. And so after, when I read the book, first opening it, I was like, oh, this is me. This is who I've been my entire life. And it was especially powerful after 2 years of trying to become something I wasn't, to connect with something that said, here's who you are already. And so it wasn't about, how do I become this? It's like, this is me. How do I connect with this? How do I find my way to this more deeply? Didn't even know that such a thing existed. Yeah? So, began looking into Taoism more. Made my first major book purchase, a $50 book.
Wow.
As a college student, that's pretty big.
Yeah. That's
it was at
big
the tattered covered bookstore, tattered cover bookstore,
yeah.
The Zhuangzi that we've studied here some time ago. And I still have the same book by Burton Watson. So, you know, bought that other seminal Taoist text. So I was reading that. And I think I'd seen that Kung Fu show off and on throughout the years, but I think it was during that time that I saw it again and then recognized, oh, that's Taoist stuff they're talking about. Then I remembered, when I was a kid, I saw that. So that first memory, that's when it all clicked, like, huh, that's why it feels like, of course this is who I am. It kind of went back a long time ago. So that was going on and opened my eyes that there's more out there than what I'd seen in my society and the religion I'd been trying for a few years. There's more to explore. So that was good. I also was drifting away from my major and was trying to explore what I wanted to do in college. So I was taking other classes, and there's this one class that I'd say it's a pivotal moment in my life too. It was called Studies in the Occult. So Studies in the Hidden Things. So the books there were The Tao of Physics, The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, so esoteric stuff about other realities that we don't hear about in the mainstream. But the one that really caught me during that class was Carlos Castaneda, A Separate Reality. Now, reading that story about, we have this reality, but there's a whole other reality behind it or beyond it, it just really excited me. So much so that I started checking out the other books he had in the middle of the class, was reading those, trying to keep up with the coursework, but I was really on fire with that, and I got a D in the class because I was interested in, you know, it really sparked something else. So that was really great, that class. Turned me in a different way. And also, around that time, during that time, I started listening to reggae and listening to the words, and I got really into reggae and read books about Bob Marley, so I took up Rastafarianism for a time. Looking at, it's an actual religion. They have a holy book, the Holy Pibi is their book. So I looked at it and, like, really looking at the religious aspect. Sometimes people hear, you know, Rastafarianism or reggae, they think about marijuana, ganja. I did pretty poor at that. I only smoked once during all that time, and it wasn't even good stuff. So for me, it wasn't about the marijuana. It was really about, I really loved skanking, dancing to the reggae. That was my worship, yeah. And then reading more about that. My hair, you can't tell, but it's fine and thin, so dreadlocks didn't work for me. I had grown out my beard some, and I could twist some of those up, but that's about as good as I could get with the dreadlock vein. So all that happened in that final year of college up at Greeley, which I left after 3 years. It's like, I was pursuing Spanish, going to be a Spanish teacher. I didn't want to do that anymore. Didn't know what I wanted to do, but I just left school for what ended up being a year. At the time, I didn't know how long I was leaving for. So moved back home, continued to read Taoism and Buddhism, but also looked into Hinduism and Islam. So kept those interests and looking into other paths going. And then there was a book that I received at high school graduation from my dad's friend, and it was called Education and the Significance of Life. And I thought, that sounds boring. And so I hadn't opened it for 3 years. It's by Krishnamurti. So if you know Krishnamurti at all, I opened it during that time of being home, and that was like exactly what I needed to be reading. Had I read it when I first gotten it, it wouldn't have had the impact, but it was all about exactly what I was interested in. So Krishnamurti became one of the common features of my explorations. So looking into all of these things, kept drifting back to Buddhism, Taoism, but Krishnamurti as well. Hinduism stuck around for a while. I really liked the devotional aspect of that, the chanting and whatnot. So I was living with my mom in a little apartment, and I was looking, how can I go practice Buddhism or something in town? And I found a Buddhist place not too far away. It was SGI, the Soga Gokai International. So I thought, great, I'm going to go give it a shot. So I showed up one night, and it was not at all the kind of Buddhism that I had in mind. Anybody ever gone to SGI or heard much about it? The message I got, they gave me a book, they gave me some beads to chant with, and they said, if you want money, if you want a house, if you want a car, just chant and you'll get it. I was like, what? But I said, okay, I'll give it a shot. They showed an informational video. They had celebrities in the audience, like celebrities are practicing this. So I watched the video and took the book home, and next morning I woke up early with the beads and I chanted through the entire chant book. It took about half an hour, and then I said, okay, I'm done. So for a long time I said, I was Buddhist for half an hour. So I kept looking, like, that's not what I understand of the practice. That's not the practice I'm drawn to. What about the meditation? What about, you know, the stuff that we do? So during that time, again, it turned out to be a year. I guess about a year after I left college, so it was springtime, I went to India. I was 21. And I didn't do it properly. There was my mom's friend who had gone there before. He says, if you really want to go, you got to save up your money and take off 6 months and go and visit all this kind of thing. I was like, I'm not going there to be a tourist. And I only have enough money to go for a week. I only have enough time off work to go for a week. But I need to go because it's like this spiritual mecca. Sorry, Islam. Spiritual center. I wanted to go to Bodh Gaya, to Varanasi, to the holy city where the Bodh tree is. And it's just like, I need to do this now. I didn't want to wait decades till I could save the money and do it proper. So I was like, I need to go. So I went all alone. You know, didn't think about it till becoming a parent later, maybe. A parent. Like, wow, my parents, this was before the internet and cell phones, so their son took off halfway around the world to India. What? And my plans didn't work out because I bought tickets to go to Varanasi on a train. Then I was told the train derailed, so I wasn't able to make the trip. But instead, they let me go see... I mean, they didn't let me. They said, hey, how about going to see the Taj Mahal? I was like, okay. So, had to settle for the Taj Mahal. But also, just spent time hanging out, wandering around through Delhi, and visiting other things. Gandhi's... the place where Gandhi was assassinated. So I had a good trip overall. Didn't turn out the way I wanted. But that was fine. Returned home. And at that time decided, well, I'm going to go back to college and I'm going to major in psychology because that's about getting to know our minds and getting to know who we are as human beings. So my spiritual interests could also be translated into getting a degree, perhaps, yeah? I didn't see any difference between the two. Then I took off to Western State College in Gunnison. And so studying psychology, did the best I ever did with grades during that period because I was really interested in the subject matter, which is just, what is it to be human? What is it to be alive, I think. And I continued for a while with Hinduism, but then it just became a back and forth between Krishnamurti and Taoism and a little bit of Zen. And the thing about Krishnamurti, if you don't know him, is he says, don't follow any religion. Don't believe in anything that somebody tells you. Look at it yourself. Investigate. If you just follow religion blindly, you're depending upon other people's words. And so that's why I would bounce back and forth, because I've been reading about Taoism, maybe some Zen, but then say, no, Krishnamurti says, even don't even do that. But then I'd say, oh, he's so Taoist. And eventually I realized, if I'm adhering to what Krishnamurti says, I'm making him the authority. And that's when I decided, I'm going to go for Taoism and put Krishnamurti aside. So then I began to look at, how can I connect with Taoism? Going back to that spark from the Tao Te Ching, how do I connect with this practice? There happened to be a book in the library there, of all places. They had a listing of I think it was mainly just Buddhist centers, but spiritual centers in the United States. I don't know how many times I poured through that book thinking I must have missed something. I didn't find anything. I was looking for Taoism and I couldn't find it. Then I said, what about a Zen place? And I still couldn't quite find. It was weird to go to this book again and again thinking I would find something, but I just didn't. So I said, well, I can't find a place to practice Taoism. So somehow, I don't know if the internet, I think it was just beginning to be a thing there, but I've looked up information about a Taoist temple in Beijing called the White Cloud Temple. So I sent them a letter. A big thing, but I'd like to come practice with you. I want to practice Taoism, and I'm okay leaving this life behind, and blah, 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 blah. Sent him a nice little carved turtle, because I knew the customary thing, send a gift to the Chinese with your request. So I never heard back from them. But there was that kind of fire. I'll just be all the way over to China, see if I can go over there to practice. Interestingly, this is just a slight aside from something I discovered last night. I was sitting and I had this little, I recently ordered some incense and it came with a sample pack of other incense. And one of the incenses is titled White Cloud. So I burnt that one last night. But the Japanese for it is Haku'un. And in our lineage, the Sambo Kyodan was founded by one of the people is Haku'un Yasutani. So his name meant White Cloud. So it's kind of a coincidental, I reached out to White Cloud across the oceans and instead ended up coming to a lineage with White Cloud in it, woven into it. So just a strange little coincidence, yeah? Let's see. Try not to be too long here. All right, that's good. Now next. We're getting there. So I moved to Key West after I graduated college in Gunnison. My cousin's uncle, aunt, they lived there, so I lived with them for a time and was interested in trying to practice Zen and study it. There was a Zen center there, and I went one evening, just showed up and sat with them and didn't click. I never went again. There was also issues of transportation and whatnot, but there was also, it just didn't quite do anything, yeah. So I figured I'll just study on my own and went to the bookstore. And the book that I selected was Moon in a Dewdrop, which is the Shobo Genzo as translated by Kaz Tanahashi. So it's Dogen's work, which is really complex. And that's like the first serious book I picked up was this really, wah! I'd have two bookmarks, one where I was and one in the glossary explaining what the hell it was saying. And I didn't get the concepts, but I was enlivened by them. And just so I kept studying. I never had finished the book. Still have both the bookmarks in it. But there was something about just connecting with it that way. But then 9 months later, I moved back home, having not connected with anything. Continued to, got a job, continued to study that Zhuangzi book. I remember taking it to work and reading it in the downtime that I had. And let's see if I'm missing anything there. Not really. Got married. That's where I met Wendy, was at that job. And so I got married during that time. And it was great because, the lesson I kind of learned or told myself I learned from back with that girlfriend I had, when I started looking at other religions and she kind of, we broke up, we distanced each other, the message I'd gotten was, I can't pursue what really enlivens me and have a relationship at the same time. But Wendy showed me otherwise. I was terrified, actually, when I found out she was raised Catholic. I was like, not terrified, but I was like, oh no. I guess I'm going to have to stop looking at all this stuff. But then she was not actively practicing. She was actually interested in this kind of stuff to a degree. So I got the message that I can actually pursue these things I'm interested in and be in a relationship. And we've been married 20 years now, so it's worked out okay. So after having that kind of go for it, green light within myself, given to myself, I looked around and internet was a thing by then, still a very infant, in its infancy, maybe. But I found there was a Tibetan group that practiced at Shove Chapel on the Colorado College campus. And so I said, great, I'll go try out this Buddhism. And I showed up. We sat for a little bit and then the person talked a lot. And I thought, that's too noisy. That's not what I was looking for. I was looking for Zen or Taoism. Oh, and that's the thing. You sometimes hear me say, I couldn't find a place to practice Taoism, so I settled for Zen. That's that thing about writing to China. It didn't work out. Okay, I'll practice Zen. But it's just kind of a joke. But there it was. I knew I wanted that Zen practice of a lot of meditation. And so I showed up to the Tibetan group, and it didn't. Again, it's like, wow, you're talking a lot. Where was the? I wanted more meditation, more of that. So part of me knew that that wasn't quite what I was looking for. Several months later, I put in the same search, and Springs Mountain Sangha popped up. Meeting in the exact same place on a different night. And so I showed up, got an orientation to meditation. After trying it on my own for a while and thinking, that can't possibly be it. Just sitting here, and no, that's not it. And the orientation I got confirmed, yeah, that's it. And then I sat with them for that evening, and instantly I felt I was at home. It wasn't because of anything I can identify. It was just a deep feeling of, home. And then there's a few things that have confirmed that, you know, since that time. One is that, where to go here? One thing was happening, like on the horizon, within 6 months of me starting, was they were having a refuge ceremony, taking vows. And when I heard that, it was like, that's what I've been trying to connect with. That's the move I need to make. That's it. And I had no idea what it meant. I had no idea what taking refuge was. I just knew that's what I've been trying to do or looking for all this time, that connection. So I'll come back to that in a moment. Because it turns out, just prior to my coming, the community had started to form a formal relationship with Joan Sutherland Roshi. And she didn't actually come and I didn't get to be practicing with her for a few years because she took some time off. So it was already woven into the community, but I didn't find out later that the Tao Te Ching was her gateway book as well. But she was 13 when she read it, and it kind of guided her life the way it went to become a scholar of Chinese and Japanese. So the tradition was already being influenced by Taoism, and more Chan than Zen, as I say. Instead of emphasizing the Japanese forms that came to us, we lean more towards the Chinese aesthetic. So it's like I felt it was the perfect community for me because it was more Taoist, really deeply rooted or connected to our Taoist roots. So that was really like, how wonderful to just come across this, not even knowing it, then discovering later there it was, yeah? So that was one of those, knowing I was home before I knew why, and that was later, well, this is why. And then the refuge thing, which is what I'll close with. David Weinstein, I was told you need to usually work with a teacher when you take refuge, and I reached out to Joan, and she said she doesn't take students for a certain period of time if they're brand new, but talk to this new teacher, David Weinstein. So we arranged a phone call, and I called him up. Our very first phone conversation, I said, I want to take refuge. And this is what's in my ceremony recording, that he says he thought that was really strange. It's like, you just started. You just came to this community. He was thinking, that's a very strange thing to request. Then he says, what was even stranger is that he thought it was a good idea. And so he went with it. And so 6 months later, I had my first retreat, met my teacher face-to-face for the first time, and took refuge. And when you take refuge, as some of you know, you get a Dharma name assigned. It's given to you, assigned. You know, you're given a Dharma name in consultation. But he said when he saw me, it was clear that my name was Bright Wave. He said, I was like, hi, I'm Andrew. He's like, oh, Bright Wave. I had a connection with water. So Bright Wave was the name that he gave me at that time. So back in those days, on our Rakkasu, you would have it written in Chinese or Japanese, but you wouldn't have the how you say it in Chinese or Japanese. So we just, Bright Wave, and we only go by our regular names. I never went by Bright Wave, went by Andrew all the time. But I got curious, well, how would you say this in Japanese? So I looked up in my little Japanese-English dictionary, which I had had since those teenage days, and found, you know, nami is wave, like tsunami. So nami is wave. And one of the words for bright is hikari. But another one is ko. So ko nami. And when I looked that up, I had this other memory of the time when I was working in the place where I met Wendy, which was a psychiatric treatment center for children and adolescents. I was assigned one-to-one with looking after a kid who was, it's a longer story, but he needed to be supervised all the time. And so I would kind of hang out in his doorway and have to entertain myself because I'd be there for 8 hours a day just watching over him. And so at this one point, for a little while, I just started singing this little song that went, "Hi, Konami Nami, yo, Konami Nami." But I remembered that when I figured out my Dharma name, you would say Konami. And it was like, I knew my name before it was given to me. And what was even weirder was that David knew my name, and he knew that I knew it, and he gave it to me. That's weird. But it was kind of a confirmation of, you know, if you want to call it karmic entanglements or whatever, just having that happen was another confirmation of, oh, I'm in the right place in this practice. With David and Joan as my teachers all this time, in the community, and now with all of you. And I've rambled quite a lot. But I've gotten to the point I thought I'd get to, taking refuge. And that's how I came to practice. So, thank you for listening. I'm tacking on an addendum to this talk to bring in something that wasn't included in the interest of time and feels worth including. It relates to the trip to India I took earlier on in my journey. That outward journey was also an inward journey that I was making, trying to get to Varanasi, the holy city, to this essential place of spirituality. And the external world was a way of connecting internally with deep spirituality and some kind of essential thing there. And that's why I was drawn to go there. And as I shared, the trip didn't work out as I planned. I didn't make it to Varanasi. And so I felt that I had missed out on connecting with that deep spirituality within myself as well, due to things not going as planned. And this manifested, this regret, this having missed out, manifested within me as a recurring dream that went on for years and years after that trip to India. In the dream, I would be traveling to India or some other foreign place and head out to try to find a shop that sold Buddha statues. Sometimes I couldn't find it, most times I could find a shop, and then I'd look among the statues, and sometimes there wasn't the right statue, but often there was, that's the statue, that's the one I'm looking for. Yet I was traveling with others, and we had more things to do on our trip overall, so instead of buying the statue right then and toting it around, I decided I'd do the other things, wrap up our journey, and on the way, as we're concluding, I'd swing by, pick up the statue, and then we'd be on our way home. And as happens in dreams, I would get to that point of wrapping things up, head back to the shop, and the shop would be gone, having never been there in the first place. Or get to the shop, and the Buddha would be gone, either having never been there in the first place, or somebody else got it instead of me. So that just showed me, reminded me, how I missed out on connecting with what I had intended to connect with going to India. And it plagued me again for years and years. This dream showed up, and I wake up feeling brokenhearted and sorrowed and a burden upon me, knowing that I had an opportunity that I didn't take advantage of, didn't do what I was supposed to do. So then many years later, having engaged in this practice and in our way, doing what we do, I noticed at some point that that dream stopped showing up. And it had been some time, actually, since it had shown up before I noticed it, because that's kind of what happens with the recurring dreams. They show up and they show up, but then you never know when they're going to come again. But then I realized quite some time had passed and the dream hadn't shown up, and it hasn't shown up since.
So, what a relief that was, yeah? And it was another affirmation that I had found the practice and the way that is my way, my practice, this practice. And what it shows me is that, you know, Buddha being symbolic of awakening, one of our translations, I take refuge in Buddha, I take refuge in awakening, that Buddha I was looking for, the awakening I was looking for, I found it right here in this very life that I'm living now. And it's always been here, in the very life I've always lived, right here, the awakening that I'm seeking, always right at hand. So, again, another affirmation of, yeah, this is my way and my practice, and so grateful to have found it and connected with it, and to still be journeying along it.